patients. And I think that's really the base of what I am proposing, that we help facilitate in the national election supervisor role how this election is going to be run, and then rely on the local stations and the local station, the local election supervisor to implement it, given that that person is all five of them are following the same set of guidelines and rules.
Stephen, I do want to ask you about the guidelines question, because the last supervisor, the national supervisor, had a handbook, or what he called a handbook. I haven't seen that yet, although there are lots and lots of rules and guidelines for the local supervisors. And then they got interpreted quite individually in many cases at the local level. So this committee is going to be working on a handbook for the local election supervisors. Mm-hmm. And you feel that you would like to help us at an early stage develop such a handbook between what we already have?
I would like to very much take part of that, because I helped to develop one.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
I helped to work on one here at KPFT.
That's right. We have five local ones in addition to the national supervisor's mm-hmm. set of guidelines, and I'm sure that Stephen might be interested in knowing how that will affect his.
I think that given that there are already guidebooks in place is fantastic, and we are. I think what our company is interested in doing is helping you fine tune and coordinate that system so it works for all the stations. But the first thing will have to be the list maintenance and getting that list in order, so that the members are clearly defined. And it seems that the station or the staff membership is a little unclear at some of the some of the stations than others. But
yes,
that
we're working on that.
Carolyn,
yes,
this is Wendy.
Yes, Wendy.
I'd like to ask a question.
Yes, go ahead. I think we're running close to the end of our time. We have about
Well, I'll just try to be really quick.
No, I don't mean for that. I mean, we have about 10 more minutes, and I think a lot of questions would be in order. Go ahead.
Okay, so your name is Stephen, right?
Yes.
I think I love what you're saying about, you know, making sure the lists are all cleaned up before this whole thing starts. That's perfect. That's exactly what we need. I wanted to ask a question. So your company, your service, here's the problem we didn't actually have this problem last year. Let me just make it a hypothetical problem. Okay, so the National Election Supervisor decided to, all by himself, that it was too expensive to mail out the candidate, the people who were running their candidate statements with the ballots. He decided all by himself that he was just going to send out the ballots. And, you know, the board freaked out once they finally learned about this. And apparently what happened was that the whole, that they had, like, a certain size envelope, a certain size piece of paper that was supposed to go in that envelope. Like, the whole contract was based on that. And I guess in the beginning maybe they had planned that the candidate statements would go out this certain size envelope, I don't know. But whatever happened, once he decided that, and we said, no, we really want the listeners to know what they're voting for in the same envelope as their ballot, and then it became, it has to be a certain size envelope, everything was all pre-configured. So I'm just wondering, actually, I don't even know what my question is. I mean, that sounds so absurd to even say it. All of a sudden it was decided that we weren't going to tell the people what they were voting for. And so does your service only have certain size envelopes and certain parameters that we should know about ahead of time? I guess that's my question.
No, we've got all different sizes.
It's so lame to ask this question.
I understand what your question is, because I've read a little of Ken's report and actually met Ken.
Okay.
Yes, he's one of my competitors now. We tend to stick to the stock size envelopes, and we're not interested in making custom size envelopes, but you will know after your nominations deadline how many candidates you have, or potential candidates you have. And I would propose that well in advance of that, each candidate knows what they're getting into.
Right.
In other words, they will be required to provide a background statement on themselves or a position statement, whatever you want to call it. And it will be limited to so many words. They will get a 2x2 half-tone picture, and they'll be required to turn all this stuff in by a certain time. And when somebody agrees to do that, they're actually, they really are committed to running. And we do not want to make it difficult for them to get all their information in on time, but it does comment on how organized somebody is.
You know what, Stephen, let me just interrupt you. The candidates didn't have any problem with that. There were very clear parameters for everybody else. It was just that all of a sudden something changed, and then it became difficult to adapt to it because we had contracted with the True Ballot thing. And so, I mean, we had done this before with ourselves and didn't have that problem. And so what I'm asking you is, if we contracted with your company, would you tell us all your parameters ahead of time?
Right.
I think that's more to the point of Wendy's question. Wendy really is asking if there's a chain of command that we can look at and see that's quite transparent. And avoid some of the problems that you've already seen in that report, Stephen. I know you have.
If there is a change because you have so many more candidates than you anticipated in one station and fewer candidates than you anticipated at another station, we will change the print requirement to meet your needs to make it as efficient as possible. And there's plenty of time in the schedule that's in the bylaws to do that. It's all just a matter of being prepared for it in advance. And I know we've reacted to those situations in past elections. Our largest client is the Sierra Club, and there are some years that there are people, you know, fighting tooth and nail with each other, and they going on and on and on about what they want to say in their candidate statements, and suddenly they have this huge package that has to be mailed to all the members. And in some years, it's just a regular election, and the package that goes out is looks like a regular number 10 envelope with a return in it.
Okay, can I interrupt you again and just say you won't have that problem with us. We have rules about, like, you know, it's a 500-word candidate statement or whatever. And we fight with each other all the time, but by the time we got around to hiring you, it would be definitely already set up. But the problem that we had before was that there were some changes beyond the control of the Pacifica Foundation that happened. I mean, well, some people would say it's beyond the control. Other people would say, well, what are you people doing if you're going to let somebody else change all that? But anyway, it's really like, will you tell us ahead of time what your requirements are for envelope size and, you know, how much time you need and all that stuff? Would that be all set up? Would you be forthcoming with that information before we hired you?
Absolutely. Yeah, we would have the basic package or our best estimate at what the package is going to look like defined well in advance. If that changes, we're going to let you know well in advance or as quickly as we can that it's changing, and you will have to agree to the change simply because that's just the way we communicate with our clients. I mean, we understand that things change from time to time.
That's awesome. And what we're going to do this time is make sure that it is defined who is authorizing that change, because that was kind of part of the problem.
Yes, that's a really serious question. Let me ask you a question here. We have obviously some long-range needs and some relatively immediate needs. For instance, getting a handbook and getting some rules out is relatively soon. An audit of some sort, we have to plan that relatively soon, even though it's not going to be done right away, but the bulk of the work would be later. How do you work with a company? Would you give us a written package, a choice of packages? Do you want to give us some information to help us decide whether we want to hire you in writing or?
Yeah, I'd put a written proposal together
mm-hmm.
for you.
Mm-hmm.
My initial thought is some sort of time and materials type proposal, which says, you know, if you want to use our
mm-hmm.
expertise for, you know, 10 hours a month, here's the rate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're interested in having us produce a booklet for you
mm-hmm.
or a guide, the cost of producing that guide is X. I'm being very broad here because,
mm-hmm, sure.
I'd like you to have a menu of service options, and some of those service options may not be known at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea is that you would retain us for our election expertise and use it as you see fit. And, well, from time to time, there might be some unsolicited advice thrown out your way. It's up to you to take it or not. But we can give you the best advice possible for running and completing an election on time and within the parameters of the bylaws. And then we can also help you with some of the issues you have with list maintenance and working with the local election supervisor. And so that's the extent that we would like to get involved.
Now, obviously, we have to talk about this, but
yeah.
How long would it take you, for instance, to get a written proposal to us once we give you some mm-hmm. idea of what it was we were looking for?
Well, I can write my proposals pretty quickly. Right now, we are finalizing a lot of work with the Teamster locals. They have their delegate elections coming up in the beginning of the year, and so we're trying to help them get all their requirements in order. So we're all pretty busy, but over the next few weeks, I'll be able to focus on getting some of my other proposals and contracts out. So I can certainly make time for you. LaVarne really isn't that far away from me.
Oh, okay.
And and we also have an office on Long Island. So
that's right.
Mm-hmm. Carolyn, I know you're based in New York
here,
too.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
Can I interrupt? What's the name of your company?
It's called Election Services Corporation.
Okay, great.
And it is on the net. I think I sent you the URL somewhere.
It's electionservicescorp.com.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Okay.
I'd like to
ask a question. This is Ted from Houston, and my question is, can you provide us with a list of all your former clients within the last 2 years?
Well, okay.
Not all of them?
I can provide you with a list of clients that have not said that they don't want it disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
There's an extensive list on your website, by the way.
I think we've got some clients listed on the website, too.
Mm-hmm.
Some of our unions don't care to have their names disclosed.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a bunch of credit unions and associations, and some of them are willing to be references and everything.
Carolyn?
Yes, I think we have about 5 minutes left mm-hmm. if anyone has any more questions. Yeah.
I have a question, Wendy.
Wendy.
Mm-hmm. Wendy from Houston again. So, Stephen, what if our election happened during a November, which, you know, is sometimes a national election time? Would you still be able to accommodate us?
We don't have anything to do with public elections.
Okay.
We deal strictly with private corporations and associations. We don't work with any campaigns or candidates.
Okay.
That's a nice answer. Thank you.
I mean, that stuff's crazy.
It's helpful. It's helpful to know.
It certainly is, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Does anyone else have any other questions?
Not yet.
All right,
later on.
All right. So should I, Carolyn, should I follow up with you, or LaVarne, can I give you a call tomorrow?
This is LaVarne. Either way is fine with me.
Okay.
And
I'd like to know where you want to go with this.
Yes, we have to sit down and decide, and we'll mm-hmm. get back to you as soon as we can.
All right.
Thank you very much for the time, Steve.
Sounds good. Well, everybody, have a nice evening.
Okay.
Thank you, Stephen.
Sure. Take care.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you
very much. Appreciate it.
That's
yeah.
great.
Great.
Bye.
Thank you.
Oh, okay, so that was...
Well, I think we
thought. Mm-hmm.
Did we lose some people, or...
No,
you gained Kerry.
Good.
Say what?
Terry Jane. Terry.
Oh, good.
Good. All right. Well, I think at some point maybe we'll need to go into an executive session to discuss this a little more, but I don't know if we want to do that tonight or not.
No, I think we... I would like to know more about that company, and I have some other things that were... But
What's the next agenda item?
Next item is a special order.
The revision of the election's timetable proposal, and we're 10 minutes late on it. It was a special order. So
can we move on to that? Because, as much as we've all announced it on our stations, I don't know what we're doing for this in Houston. I don't know what the recommendation of the Elections Committee is.
Well, I think this is Terry's, right?
This is Terry. Terry, would you like to explain this motion?
Yes.
What's your back? Number 7.
The required numbers of directors have announced an intention to bring to Houston a proposal to make a change, an amendment to the bylaws to change the election timetable, which is obviously an area where this committee might have a voice.
You would think.
Yeah. there are a couple of basic changes that it's making. One, it's increasing the time between the close of nominations and the mailing of ballots. Between the mailing of ballots and the final date where they must be received, which allows more time for people to respond. And they also are proposing a shortening of the nominating period. Now, the idea of increasing the time for ballots to be received and returned is a good idea because there is a section in the bylaws not related to the election of delegates that requires that amount of time for the mailing of proposals for bylaws amendment. So if the greater time is also applied to LSB elections, then ballots for LSB elections and amendment proposals can be a consolidated ballot. But the proposal to change the nomination period is problematical because it could be interpreted that reducing the nomination period will impact the ability of some of the membership to have their representatives gather enough signatures to get on the ballot as candidates because the reduced nomination period reduces the amount of time in which potential candidates can gather signatures. Because of that impact, I think that particular change is of a sort that requires membership approval before it's actually implemented under the California Corporations Code and under our bylaws. So this proposal would maintain the current 62-day nomination period by amending the bylaws proposal before it is voted on by the PMB if they accept our recommendation. That would increase the cost of the elections because it means we have to hire election supervisors a month ahead of time. But it protects us against the challenge to the elections that could be brought forward by a candidate who was unable to acquire the required number of signatures in the reduced nomination period, and thereby would argue that the change to the bylaws was illegal.
Okay, are we going to...
So it just changes the first sentence of the proposal that's being brought forward by directors for vote in Houston.
Terry, you sent around some information to the committee, and you've summarized the changes in the record date, in the nominating close date, in the ballot mailing date, and so on. So if anybody has that material... explain some of what Terry has just explained in a little more detail. Does anyone have any questions?
You mean other than what's here?
Yes, he had sent around a long explanation when he first proposed this. And I think I would like to speak to one point. Does anyone else have?
And we also have to mention that Ted has a possible amendment.
Yeah, I would like to speak to it, so I'd like to be on the stack. You know when you sent that approximately, Terry?
I'll look it up.
I think the amendment goes to the other resolution, does it not?
Oh, you're right.
I think it belongs with the second one.
I'm sorry.
It's related to this. Yes, I'm sorry. Who wanted to speak?
Well, I was one who did.
Terry. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I sent out my explanation on September 17th at 9:07 a.m.
It starts, it would be appropriate for the PNB Elections Committee to take a position, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah. I personally am in favor of this, not because I'm sure that the legal point of whether it does or does not require membership approval could be argued and people would. But my reason is that a month is ridiculous. We were trying to do outreach, and I've been involved in four of these elections now. It doesn't matter as far as the process is concerned, whether it was the LAB or the LSB, getting candidates to run, and how you do it is the same procedure. And it's just way too short for them to decide they want to do it and everything else and get their stuff together and for people to... So I really am in favor of this, and I hope we don't get too boggled in the, you know, whether or not it would require membership, because I can just hear people framing arguments to the contrary. It's kind of on the cusp, and it's not totally clear-cut like a lot of stuff isn't. So I just really want to go for it.
Anyone else want to speak to this? I would like to speak in favor of this simply because I agree that the shortened time for nominations really disadvantages any mm-hmm. candidate who's not an incumbent.
It's horrible.
And I think that people really need that extra time if they're new to it, and it mm-hmm. certainly would encourage them to run if they thought they had that much extra time to collect signatures and campaign.
We can't even find the people. I mean, you know, it's not easy.
Is anyone else speaking to this, or are we ready to take a vote then?
Yeah, I guess.
Are there any objections to this?
This is the amendment to the other...
Oh.
No, this is the motion itself.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a revision.
Ours is different than the one that's been being broadcast.
Right.
Well, that's...
Right. Yeah, the other one is... Yeah, this is...
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand your question, Ted.
It was Richard.
Oh, Richard, I'm sorry.
In other words, what we're voting on now is our recommendation, which is slightly different than the current one that the PNB is floating.
Right.
Yes, Mary, perhaps for the listeners, too, you should read the motion, if you can, on number 7.
Okay. Well, resolved that the PNB Elections Committee recommends that the text of the proposed amendment be revised prior to its adoption to begin, quote, in a delegate election year, the nominations for vacating seats shall open on June 24th and remain open for 62 days, closing on August 25th.
Right.
And the other dates stay the same.
I guess I'd like to just raise one issue here. I don't want to start a whole new thread of discussion and debate, but I'm a little concerned about that second period being lengthened. You know,
the second period.
Yeah.
Meaning?
The time from when the ballots go out to when they come back. Because if we're going to do first-class mail, there's not going to be any problem. And I'm just concerned about activities. You know, you need to have a campaign. You need to have the campaign get the people get their ballots and then send them back. And if it goes on too long, in some respects, it may give an advantage to those people that have connections with stations, depending upon how things are happening. And, you know, there shouldn't be any dirty tricks, but there were last time. People used the airwaves to support people in various ways. And so, I don't know, it just seems to me that we don't need a real long period after the campaign for
when the ballots arrive to have them come back. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of extra time in there. If we're doing first-class mail, I don't see the point for it. I think we should have the campaign, get the people on the air, have the debates on the air, have the interviews and so forth. The ballots go out, and the ballots come back.
I guess I want to go back on the stack again.
Yeah, uh-huh. Terry on the stack.
Terry, go ahead.
Yeah, the reason for the lengthening is because under Article 3, Section 10, ballots for bylaws amendments must start going out 45 days before the election, which is longer than the period required for candidates. And in order to, we could shorten them both.
Oh, I see.
In the bylaws amendment, but that shortening would also require membership approval, and so couldn't apply for the next election.
Oh, so we're changing one because we can't change the other easily.
Okay.
All right. Well. All right. That's as long as we're diligent about fair play, it won't be a problem.
That is the issue. I agree with you. Monitoring the fair campaign rules, Mary.
Well, if there isn't fair play, then you're just saying make the period as short as possible so that the amount of unfair play is going to be restricted by the time, not by restricting the behavior. And I don't quite see that logic. I have found that we did need the time, and people will suffer, especially those new to the process and the people we're trying to recruit, the old-timers or the old hands at it, who've been around the block with it.
Barry, you're on the wrong subject. The recruiting is not done with the time.
This is not just the recruiting. It's getting the ballots, knowing who the candidates are, getting enough time on the air. You just can't take and put the whole airwaves over to campaign things because nobody will listen anymore, so you need to spread it out. Campaign events for people who live in different areas. You just can't clump this all in too small of a frame, and it's also very hard on the candidates. I can think of so many reasons why, in addition to the excellent one Terry cited, that I would be opposed to shortening that time. So, again, I support that for more than one reason.
Does anyone else have any comments on this? Well, are we ready to vote then?
Yeah.
Are there any objections to this?
I'm sorry, Carolyn, can you read the motion again?
Mary? Do you want to read the motion with the whereas and the fiscal impact, the whole thing? Perhaps
well, that's not the motion itself, but those are the arguments in favor of it, right?
No,
okay,
the whereas.
Let me read the whole thing?
Just tell me what I'm supposed to vote on.
Okay. What you're supposed to vote on is the resolution, this is the resolution, that the PNB Elections Committee recommends that the text of the proposed amendment be revised prior to its adoption to begin, quote, in a delegate election year, the nominations for vacating seats shall open on June 24th and remain open for 62 days, closing on August 25th. And if you want the other date...
Wait. So that's the change. So what does it say right now? What's the thing we're even saying on the air?
Right now it says July 25th. Isn't that right, Terry?
Yeah.
And it goes to from July 25th to August 31st?
No, August 25th, 31 days.
Yeah, 31 days. The thing we have now.
But the
amendment is to make it 6/24.
Yeah.
Okay.
6/24. But I think that's wrong. This is Ted. I'm reading Section 5, I don't know what article, election time frame. Am I reading the right thing, Terry? It reads, in a delegate election year, the nominations for vacating seats shall open on July 25th and remain open for 62 days, closing on September 25th.
Right. The proposal is to change that, to keep the open date but shorten the period. That's what the PNB is considering.
What's the thing they're considering now.
What's the thing we're playing on the air? What dates are those?
Where do I have that?
I thought that was the question I asked.
That's what the question that was answered, I think.
Terry, when you say this would change the record date from 8th, prospectus that you put out, this would change the record date from 8/31 to 8/16, this refers to the current motion by the Bylaws Committee?
Yeah.
Okay.
They are proposing various changes.
You're right.
And we're objecting to one of those changes.
Right.
Yeah, their amendment says open on July 25th and on August 25th. Yeah. And the ballots would be mailed on September 30th, and they'd have to be received on or before November 15th.
And Terry's amendment says no, 6/24, and what's mm-hmm. the end date?
August 31st,
right?
25th. Here, wait. Mm-hmm. 62 days. August 25th.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other dates, let's see, where are the other dates on here, Terry?
I'm sorry, guys. I guess I wasn't paying attention. What does the bylaws say right now?
They say that the nominations for vacating seats shall open on July 25th. And I think what Terry is saying is to move it a month earlier. And the current bylaws say remain open for 62 days, closing on September 25th. And what he is suggesting is in moving it earlier to August 25th,
mm-hmm.
which is in the current proposal before the PNB.
Right.
So it's the same thing.
It's the same thing on that end, but it starts earlier, so we get our 62 days, so that doesn't change the voters, the candidates' rights.
I'm sorry, let me just say it one more time. What is the proposed amendment that we've been announcing on the radio?
That shortens the time period for collecting signatures pre-closing off the candidate period.
It would change the date from,
It would change the record date from 8/31 to 8/16.
Yeah.
Terry, am I reading correctly?
Yeah, but there's...
Yeah.
It would change the nominations close date from 9/25 to 8/25. And it would change the ballot mailing date from 10/15 to 9/30.
But the real essence of it is it cuts off about 30 days
exactly.
of candidate development time.
Of the nomination
But what's
period.
The difference between Terry's amendment and that?
About 30 days.
62 days, 60 days roughly, instead of 30 for the nomination period.
So the difference is 30 days. More time to find candidates and for candidates to be able to qualify to
yeah.
have a name on the ballot.
And go to meetings and see if they want to do it and all of that stuff.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, it's complicated. Anybody else have any more questions or any clarification? I guess we're ready to vote then, Mary.
Okay. Is that a fact? Okay.
You guys, I'm sorry. I guess I wasn't prepared for this meeting. Are you saying that Terry's amendment is the same as the bylaws amendment, except that it adds 30 days prior?
Yes.
Yes.
Essentially.
It moves it up. Okay.
May I comment?
Yes.
Yeah, I wish you would.
Yeah. The proposed amendment shortens the period for collecting signatures.
Right.
What we are saying is that the proposed amendment is fine, but you can't shorten the nominating period. So we keep the nominating period length that is currently in the bylaws.
Right.
Silly, we're letting them mess with the back end, but not the front end.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Is this doable?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's inclusive democracy.
It is.
Okay.
Is everybody clear? Does anybody have any more questions?
Can we ask if there is any opposition? Otherwise, I'd like to shorten this by not having a roll call vote.
Well, if we have any opposition, if we don't have any opposition, we don't need a roll call vote.
Well,
is anyone opposed to this? No, good. Well, then I guess it passes.
Okay.
Okay, so we're going to present this to the PNB at the
Great.
Houston meeting, and who's going to do that, our Secretary Mary?
I'd ask LaVon to read the report, and we'll just include this in a report of all the things that are being that we've passed so far, which is in the last quarter anyway.
And if I may comment,
please.
Somebody should try to schedule the Elections Committee report before the Governance Committee report or before the bylaws changes.
Yes, I'm
Oh, that's a good point. How are we going to do that?
Well, I'm going to ask LaVarne to see to the agenda, and I will talk to whoever sets the agenda and make the point that it's important that this go before. Simply, it just makes sense to put it first.
So wait now, who is going to present and everything?
Well, I can't go to the meeting, and I asked
okay.
her if she would read the report,
maybe
which will
I
be
could,
a compilation of our motions, and this will be one of them. And
can I suggest we move on? We've got some national board members, and you guys can figure out amongst yourself who's going to present this, even if it's at you know,
that's
at
Ted. Okay,
face
Jerry,
to face.
Do you have anything
You're
to
suggesting backroom dealing. Yeah, we can do that.
Yeah.
So I think we've already done as much as we're going to have to. That's wonderful.
There's no money involved, Wendy, so it can't be counted as backroom dealing.
Okay, good. Right. Thank you for that.
That would be really good.
Wonderful.
All right. But the other one has a whole lot of, you know, it's up, it's way ahead of us and had a lot of exposure now, so we're going to have some work to do.
Yes,
get
that's
that
true.
Through.
That's true. I think it's a very simple, logical thing, and I think the two points that, to me, are crucial are that it gives nominees much more time, and it avoids a potential fiscal problem.
Well, it avoids a potential problem of people claiming that their rights have been changed and that the whole thing's invalid. Therefore, if they feel you know they're complaining.
Which
Mary and Carolyn, we've already voted. We passed it. We
okay.
don't need to discuss it anymore.
Okay. Well, now we have to. Do we have to move to take up a matter early because the next matter was to start at 10:30?
Not unless somebody objects to moving ahead.
Oh, that's right. That's
that
right. Anybody object to starting the topic records
item
of
number eight. Mm-hmm. Tell them what we're doing and let's just do it.
Okay.
This
item
is the
eight.
Records of unpaid staff
unpaid
members.
Staff members. Okay.
And Mary, do you want to read the entire thing? It's very long.
Okay. Does everybody want to hear it read?
Oh, I think we must.
People, okay.
People on the
well, this is the motion. Records of unpaid staff members. Resolved. One, that the general managers of each Pacifica station shall maintain a roster updated monthly and retained for 12 months of the individuals who qualify as staff members under the bylaws criteria for stations with no unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff bargaining units. Authority over sections of this unpaid staff roster may be delegated, but primary responsibility rests with the GM. Two, that the GMs of each Pacifica station with a recognized unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff bargaining unit shall maintain a roster updated monthly and retained for 12 months of the individuals who have been qualified as staff members by that organization or unit. Primary responsibility for the maintenance of this roster shall be assigned to an individual designated by the unpaid staff organization or bargaining unit, but the GM may exercise authority to ensure its accuracy. Three, that the GMs of each specific station may withdraw recognition of an unpaid staff organization or unpaid staff bargaining unit for any good cause, and that one such cause would be the failure of the organization to establish and maintain qualifications for membership that restrict its size to no more than 10% more individuals than would qualify as unpaid staff members under the bylaws criteria for stations with no such recognized organizations. Four, that local and national election supervisors shall have access to the current and past membership rosters retained by the GMs so that they may independently judge whether or not a staff election based on either current roster should be certified. Five, that the fairness of the GMs in the exercise of their discretion in recognizing and withdrawing recognition from an unpaid staff organization or bargaining unit shall be one factor in each general manager's periodic evaluation by their local station board. And then there's an amendment that an individual who disputes either their or anyone's status as an unpaid staff member should, one, bring this dispute to the attention of the GM or their designate for resolution. Two, if there is not a satisfactory resolution at this level, they may appeal this matter to the LSB. Three, the final appeal should be to the PNB. Both the LSB and the PNB may designate this work to a committee or an individual.
And I'd want that amendment separated.
Okay, thank you
yeah.
very much. Well, the amendment has to be voted on first.
Well, the amendment would be separated in any case, right?
And where I think the amendment is open for discussion.
Terry?
Ted, would you like to present it first? I believe it was yours, and then Terry.
I think it speaks to itself. I'd like to hear I'm open to modification of it as opposed to it being an up or down. I'm not hard and fast on it, but I don't like giving all that authority to the general manager. I think that's too much power in the hands of one person. And the whole process of, I guess I am speaking to this, and the whole process of using the whole the evaluation and ultimately terminating them, that doesn't strike me as being in their best interest. I think they should be able to say, hey, we've got this contentious issue. I need your wisdom on this matter. To force them to have to be the ones that make the final decision strikes me as being unfair to them and unfair to anybody who has a claim.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay. First, let me point out that this proposal would be to substitute for the motion previously passed by the committee. So it will require a two-thirds approval in order to amend
that?
By substitution the motion previously passed.
That's the amendment.
That's the main motion.
Are you talking about the motion we just did on the a few minutes ago? I don't think so.
No, the motion we haven't voted on yet, that this is an amendment to.
I'm sorry, motion would be a complete substitution, are you saying?
Yes, because they conflict. The prior motion mandates that unpaid staff organizations follow rules that are in the bylaws. But unpaid staff organizations are independent organizations. They're not. It's not appropriate for governance or management to give them particular rules.
You're talking about the motion that was passed on August 21st.
Right.
So when you say this amendment, you're talking about the motion that Mary just read, not the amendment that Ted is proposing, which would substitute for the motion that we passed last meeting.
Yeah.
Right. Now let me speak to the amendment.
Right. Okay.
We don't know everything that unpaid staff organization membership implies. An unpaid staff organization could be negotiating with management over certain things having to do with workplace environment and treatment of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
And to that extent, it would be inappropriate for the elections committee to make determinations about how membership in an unpaid staff organization is determined.
Right.
What we are concerned with is how membership in such an organization affects elections.
Mm-hmm.
And so throughout most of the year, a person's status as a member of an unpaid staff organization makes no difference as far as elections are concerned. When elections are coming up, we have election supervisors hired in order to make determinations about the application of bylaws to specific issues and disputes. So I think in the election period, a dispute about someone's status, membership status, should go through the election supervisors. And that protects those disputes from the factionalism that may exist in existing governance, where if someone qualifies as staff, they may have a better chance of being elected than otherwise, or vice versa, which could be a threat to an incumbent. So I see a conflict of interest problem if these determinations are made by local station board or PNB that is fairly resolved if they are only disputed and resolved by rulings of election supervisors. So I oppose the amendment because it's referring through governance rather than through election supervisors.
So let me understand this. Your objection is to the point that the GM might be unduly biased in resolving these disputes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a correct interpretation of one of your points here, Terry?
that everybody would be biased except election supervisors, and that the determination is only appropriate for us to make a recommendation on as it refers to elections.
Okay, I understand. All right, anybody else have another?
Yeah, I want to get on the stack.
Yeah, I want to get on the stack.
Richard
and Mary.
Well, you know, I have a problem with that last characterization because, in my experience, the last election, you know, I think there was some clear problems with the election supervisors and their honesty and bias and all kinds of stuff, which I documented thoroughly out here. And, you know, so I'm, I don't know, it just seems like we need to have some sort of ongoing reality. You know, the thing about the bylaws that the other thing is against them is not actually true, Terry, from my reading, because it actually says in the bylaws, if they're in one of these organizations, they go by them. If not, then they go by the other rules. It actually, the bylaws bifurcates the difference if you're in an organization or if you're not. So I don't know that. But that's a conflict. The thing that I would like to add to anything we send forward on this, and it's fairly simple, but I think it's a kind of a safeguard proposal, which is I'd like to add that every month a list of you know, unpaid staff from each station be sent to the election committee to go on file. And the purpose of this, of course, is that then we can monitor the growth or diminishment of them on a month-by-month basis, and if something looks kind of funny, you can deal with it. But imagine this scenario. We got 42, 42, 42, month before the election, 85.
Well, actually, Richard, point of information, I mean, point of clarification, I think point number two in the larger motion doesn't say exactly that.
Yeah,
that the roster should be updated monthly and retained for 12 months.
But where? By who? Not
general managers. Should.
General managers.
Yeah, well, that's not good enough. That's where I want it. I want it to come to. Since we've become a standing committee, I think that an ongoing committee. I think it should come to us, and then you know,
I can fix that.
Well, all right. That doesn't speak exactly to this amendment. So
well, Carolyn,
until we get there, but
okay,
we're on the amendment.
Carolyn.
Yeah.
I think that's an amendment to the amendment, and I support it, and I hope that we can address that right now. Then we can go back to the amendment. And
is that an amendment?
I don't believe it's an amendment to this amendment. It's
an amendment
to the main motion, number two specifically.
Right.
Number
and
four.
But number two and three and one, they both...
I don't want to go into an appeal or decision of the chair. I mean, we're making this too complicated by suggesting that this or this is not an amendment to the amendment. I mean, I think what Richard just said is very clear, and we can just vote on it. I mean, is there anybody who objects to monthly reports?
No, I object to calling it an amendment to something that is...
All right, well, where are we going to put this?
I would
Richard,
put it
would
in the
like
body
to...
of the five-point main motion.
Let me ask Richard what he intends her.
Can I clarify? Whichever, my point is, this is a method for auditing and trying to keep people honest and allow, you know, some ongoing review of the growth and development of those voting bodies. Whichever one we send forward, I'd like that to be attached to it, okay? That's my concern.
Richard,
so
do you have an objection to leaving it, to waiting until we get to the main motion, or to...
Yeah, I think we have...
To get to a separate amendment in number two, or do you want to amend this amendment?
Point of order? I really think the amendment, which we need to discuss before we discuss the main motion, as I understand it, concerns individuals who dispute their status. That has nothing to do with record keeping. And I think we should stick to that and dispose of it. I don't think there's a whole lot of debate about it. Some people will favor it, some won't. It's just five lines of text here. And I think we have to deal with that first. And then as to who keeps records in those issues, those are what are in the main motion.
Mary, this is Ted. And the reason I think it is applicable to the amendment is because
if a person doesn't know what's going on, if there is no easy access through the, in this case there would be, through the elections committee to see where they stand as far as their membership, then what position are they in to appeal it? So therefore, I'm fine with it one way or the other, but I think it does fit as an amendment to my amendment. I accept it as friendly, frankly.
Yeah, I don't.
Well, all right, if we're going to deal with it here, I think it's out of order at this location.
I think it is, too.
And if you'd like to appeal the ruling of the chair, we can take a vote on that.
No.
Okay, then let's just...
No, all right, then let's go on with this, and then meanwhile, perhaps Richard and Ted, you can rephrase your amendment so it will work when we get to the main motion.
I will have an amendment, too, for that when we get there.
All right. Now, is there any other amendment to this particular amendment that...
Any other discussion of it?
When you read it, Mary, you did make one change, which was absolutely correct, I think, in line 3. Bring this dispute to the attention of the general manager.
Oh, right. It says 2, and I didn't even see it.
Yeah, you read it correctly, I think.
Yeah, right. To the attention of,
Would anyone like to speak to this amendment?
Well, I'd like to call a question on it.
You can't call questions in committees of 12 or less. You don't require seconds.
That's right.
Let's go on.
I do have one. I do object somewhat to this amendment simply because, for the reason that has already been pointed out, I would like to keep the relationship between the general manager and the staff during the election period as distant as possible. And I would like to leave the determination where it, I think, belongs in the hands of the supervisors. Local, probably, and the appeal to that would be to the National Election Supervisor. Now, if those two people couldn't resolve a staff question, presumably they would know enough to consult with general managers and so on. But on that ground, I object to the amendment. I understand the intent behind it, that there should be an appeal process, but I think that our experience here in New York was that involving the general manager was somewhat disastrous, and it really did not result in such even-handed decisions when there were questions about status and questions involving staff. So I'm against this, and I would urge people not to vote for it.
Carolyn, let me give you a specific example here in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
We had a candidate who was appointed by either the mayor or city council to be on a board of the city of Houston, a board with the ability to spend, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of $1 million annually. That person asked the general manager and asked the election supervisor if they could run for the local station board. The election supervisor and the general manager both said yes, and that was the end of the matter.
Mm.
There was no appeal process that I know of, and that person won and currently serves on our local station board. The bylaws say that either elected or appointed political officials are not eligible to run for the LSB. My amendment exists to allow either the individual or somebody contesting it to take it to both the local station board and on up to the national board. Election supervisors, in the case of this particular election, this was an election supervisor who was an active member in the Democratic Party, so was the candidate in question. And it was because there was perhaps some alliance between the election supervisor and the potential candidate that the decision was rendered.
I would like
totally violating our bylaws.
Yeah, I would like to speak to that.
Yeah, I would like to speak to it also.
Fine, Mary, I'll put you on the stand. Your proposal doesn't obviate the possibility of more collusion at another level or in a different direction, for one thing. But it seems to me that at that point, since the national supervisor answers to the ED, people who objected to that decision or those decisions by the two supervisors should have appealed it to the ED and perhaps to the PNB, because it clearly it was a clear violation of the bylaws. And if the ED was not overseeing the supervisors, which was proper, then the PNB certainly should have been notified and brought into it immediately. In other words, the appeal process was not dead. It's just that no one carried it further. And I think to change the direction of the appeals process here by putting it in the hands of the GM, I know in a situation such as you described, if that had happened at WBAI, perhaps the worst place to put that appeal would have been in the hands of the GM, simply because there would have been an alliance there. So I think that the example you give me simply tells me that people didn't push hard enough for resolution of the problem, but I don't think still that your amendment improves the process. It does lengthen it somewhat, but I don't think it improves it.
I would like to know where in our...
I'm going to let Mary speak now, because you've spoken several times, and actually so have I.
Yeah, I'm opposed to it because the way it's worded, it covers every aspect of unpaid staff membership. We have an unpaid staff organization here, and membership is indeed disputed for issues having nothing whatever to do with the elections or the board or anything else, with seats on the program council, which has nothing to do with the board, with all kinds of things. We have a situation with people being signed up, maybe 50 people working on one program, and then they might want to make the rules for the whole rest of the organization, and they don't even have any real work here. None of that has to do with the board. The way this is worded, I can see Ted's point, that's fine, but then he needs to craft some language that specifically relates to elections of the LSBs and nothing else. This would be a disaster, because then we would not have any control over our own unpaid staff organization. All it says, dispute their status. So if someone comes and says, I want to join, and the unpaid staff council, who by the unpaid staff bylaws has the right to do this, they determine who the members are. They look over this person's record and says, you don't do anything here, we don't think you can belong. Then this person could go and appeal it to the GM or the election supervisor or whoever, has nothing to do with it, and the PNB, this is totally inappropriate, because we have our own methods in our own bylaws for the unpaid staff of how to resolve these difficulties. And the election committee has, I think, no proper business interfering with any of that. So really, if you want to do something that relates to the elections, a dispute of, you know, the status relating to elections, I think it has to say that, but this doesn't in any way at all.
This is Ted, and I am open to an amendment to this. Here in Houston, we do not have an unpaid staff organization. I would like to invite an amendment to this that would make the body of record to resolve disputes where there is an unpaid staff organization, that body. But this would apply to stations where there is no unpaid staff organization.
Ted, excuse me, a clarification. Did I hear you say that Houston has a USO or not?
Mm-mm. It does not.
Does not. Oh, that's what I thought. Okay, I'm sorry, I misheard.
Only Berkeley and New York have.
Right, yes, that's what I thought I knew. Well, any other comments on this amendment?
Well, can I modify what I've written here? And I also have a question. This is, where in the bylaws does it say the ultimate authority is the PNB? And I'm looking for it, and if I knew that was there, it would make some aspects of this moot. But I don't know where it says in the bylaws that someone can appeal someone's status to the PNB.
I'd like to table.
Can I speak to that?
This issue to a further meeting.
I'm sorry. Who's speaking?
Terry would like to move to table the amendment to be offered as a separate and individual amendment for consideration at a future meeting.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll accept that, assuming somebody will do the research to find out where the appeal process is described currently in the bylaws.
A point of clarification, there's no appeal process.